Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is a CCI call on the 14th of August, 2012. First of all, we have received information that Jonathan Zook and Julie Headland will be joining us a bit later today. So for the moment on the call, we have Steve Del Bianco, Tobias Mahler, Michael Graham, and Ulrika Fenderbrom. We have an apology from Carlos Aguirin. And from staff, we have Barry Cobb and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. This is Barry for the transcript. Welcome all. I think that, as Natalie mentioned, Jonathan will be a few minutes late, so we'll go ahead and get started with some of the action items, and hopefully he'll join momentarily. We've got a pretty simple agenda today, just to review through a couple of the AIs, then review through the advice letter and the supplement action plan when we submit the advice letter to the GNSO Council. And so with that, I believe that this will be our last session. So we're going to be closing up right alongside the Olympics. And
with not quite so many fireworks.
Not yet, anyway.
I hope we're not going to be singing.
Only if
sorry, the
who.
Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and go over the action items. The first one was out to Jonathan to reach out to Wendy about the minority position for the report. She did email out to the list their statement, and that has now been incorporated into version 1.9.1 in Appendix C. And I also put an anchor to that appendix within the community representation section, just denoting that there was a minority position and referencing that appendix. If anybody else has other suggestions about how to promote that within the advice letter, please let us know.
Cheryl here. It's not so much in the advice letter, but rather in the reactions. I was heartened and indeed impressed with Evan's email response to Michael's question on how we had, during the earlier discussions, dealt with or otherwise the points that Wendy was raising on behalf of NCUC. Although the letter's written on behalf of NCSG, so I'm not sure which way that goes. Anyway, we almost have a point of counterpoint comments coming in from another member. I'm wondering if that email can somehow be put into a PDF and anchored, as you've done, to the formal letter, or if there's even merit in that. It's just when Michael also, you know, as a member of the group, raised the issues of, well, how did the group deal with this dissent? And we've got another member of the group actually answering some of that quite well. I'm just wondering if that should perhaps be somewhere in the archive as well. That's all. Thank you.
This is Barry. I'll be glad to incorporate that into the Appendix C. But I believe that's overall a working group decision. And if nobody objects,
I'm just putting it out there.
Olivier?
Thank you, Barry. It's Olivier for the transcript. I was just going to ask, and I'm afraid I can't scroll up and down the CCTC public comment review tool, but was there not a review, a comment, which was already submitted in the public comments that mention exactly what Wendy sent there by email?
This is Barry. No, there wasn't. The NCSG nor the NCUC submitted any public comments at any of the meeting sessions nor the public comment forum. But as Wendy being a member representing at least the NCUC within this working group, that's what allowed the dissent position to be incorporated.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I needed to check. Thank you.
And does anyone object to including Evan's email response to append into Appendix C as well?
This is Steve. Wendy's comment was a official position through whatever means they used at the NCSG, and the NCSG is a recognized constituency in one of the ACSOs, that is the GNSO. And while I really, truly love Evan's smart response, it's just one smart guy. And that doesn't really measure up to an official position of a recognized constituency in an ACSO. So I feel like it's probably not appropriate to put Evan's comment right in there after the NCSG official position.
Steve, Cheryl here. The only reason the NCSG position is appended to our report as a minority report is the status of group member. And Evan's also a group member. I just think we're close to the line there. I don't care whether Evan's stuff goes...
Is that really the case? I was making a different point.
Okay.
Cheryl, I was making the point that the NCSG, it's not the working group per se. Isn't it the NCSG official position on the paper as opposed to Wendy's individual opinion?
It's a minority report appended to our letter, and the only reason that's happened is a status of group working group member. Otherwise, a constituency of the GNSO, which I am a member of this particular group, just by the way, so I'm very aware of how it was socialised or otherwise within that mailing list and at the meeting, it should have gone in as a comment. Now, the fact that we've elevated it from public comment to something, I would suggest, significantly more meaningful by giving it a minority report status also indicates that it has a degree of status in the working group, and that comes from the working group relationship, not from the fact that a piece of public commentary was sought.
Interesting. Okay, so you're saying that it's in here because Wendy happens to be a member.
I can't see why it's in there for any other reason. Otherwise, it belongs in the public comments, and we respond to it.
That's a very good point. So you would say that Evan's entirety has the same status?
Absolutely.
And this is Barry.
And I do declare I am a member of the NCSG. So I've got skin in this game.
So what would Evan's be? It would not be a minority report. How would we characterize it?
I was actually going to pick up from the anchoring point, not so much as an attachment in Appendix B, but rather that as Barry had anchored the minority report from the responses to comment, I thought that was where the nexus should occur. But I think we just need to be very wary about giving any component part of a work group a leverage point over outcome. Because
all right,
a work group
you already sold me on that, but I was saying that mechanically
there's
a footnote, an end note on page 2 that references Appendix C. There's a brand new appendix that contains the entirety of Wendy's statement. So if we're going to give equal status to Evan's work group member statement, it would be right there or next to or below Wendy.
Yep. Part A and B of the same thing. Yep. That's fine. I was only actually, I was hoping for an anchor like Barry had done in the, said he'd done in the responses part, but if we could do both.
Yeah, but I mean, you say it's an anchor, but all it is a statement, a dissent position can be found in Appendix C. That's the anchor.
Yep. That's fine. And so,
okay, so
that,
a sentence after that would read what? A dissent to the dissent? Is contained in Appendix D?
Counterpoint.
How do we describe Evan's work?
Counterpoint. Because he self-identifies as a member at the beginning of it anyway.
Hello all, John Berard here.
Hi John, how you doing?
I'm good.
This is Barry. So,
Wendy's. This is, let me bring you quickly up to speed. Wendy's comment is printed in our document only in respect of her being a work group member with a minority report. If we have other work group members that wanted to counterpoint the dissent, does that deserve the same status as the minority report, and can it should it be printed in the document? And we're speaking of Evan Leibovich's counter to Wendy.
This is Barry. I'll ask internally about how this is supposed to work out. I certainly didn't anticipate an individual member expanding upon that position, because in my eyes, it does start to bleed over into what should have been in the public comments versus a true stakeholder group minority position that was represented within this working group. Certainly in the past efforts that I've worked on, we've never included individual statements. But at the same point,
but
Evan...
ICANN has, Barry, Cheryl here, ICANN has. For example, an individual statement of great significance was put in as an appendix in the ALAC review because there was one outlier.
All right, very good.
And, I can pull precedent here if you really want to play hardball. I can play hardball.
Not playing hardball, just trying to understand the rules. So, all right, well, if nobody objects, then I'll append Evan's comment to Appendix C that is anchored earlier up in the advice letter. Okay. Great. Thank you. Second action item was assigned to me, but it's really assigned to us, and this is our last action item within the public comment review tool. It's regarding row 67, specifically about the wholesale pricing of GPLD domains offered to the general public. When we reviewed this comment, and Michael Graham, this is kind of pointed towards you, I think there was agreement amongst the working group that we were going to include some of the language that is highlighted with the comment under the recommended action. What was unclear to me is where we should put this statement. It didn't seem to make sense to actually include it within the metric itself. And if anything, I'd make a recommendation that it go onto page 20, where we've listed out the ICANN's legal department statement about the collection of pricing. And then we also have two note paragraphs at the end of that discussing the issue at hand. And it almost seemed appropriate that kind of statement would maybe go here. But I didn't include it there yet because it is further down in the document, and I just wanted to ask the working group where you guys would suggest placing it. And specifically, the comment is competition can take many forms, only one of which is price, and we, as in the community, should not start out with the expectation that the principle of competition in the new GTLD space will be based on price alone. In addition to changes in price, competition could instead be based on security, abuse protection, and other differentiators that registries choose to offer.
Hey, Barry, this is John.
I refer you to Note 5 on page 7. I think that we could add this to Note 5 on page 7. If you don't have a copy of the document, maybe Barry could pop it up.
Yeah, that would be useful. Thanks.
Hey, Steve.
Yes, John.
I'm of two minds on this comment. First of all, because it was one of the more provocative things to my mind that I'd heard in the last couple of meetings. On the one hand, I guess the first mind, the sentiment in this, that the point that he makes or that is made almost deserves to be at the top of our letter, of any report that we would make, because it says that there really is no one way to measure the success of the program, that it really needs to be looked at as if through a fly's eye. But on the other hand, I worry that it exposes our work to criticism because our mission was to establish the metrics. And so, you know, on the one hand, I think it's appropriate that we note that there are many ways to judge the success of the program and maybe even some we haven't considered. But on the other hand, I think I worry that it undermines the work done because we sort of say, you know, we spent a lot of time on this and even we don't have a hot clue as to which is the best way to go.
Well, to respond to that, I mean, Note 5 already starts to get to this notion of non-price means of competition. And the note that Barry had highlighted a moment ago is really just an expansion of non-price aspects of competition. And so I do think you're right. We want to have it up front, not buried in the back somewhere. And that's why I think that adding it to Note 5 would be a good fit. And then I wanted to note that we still recommend the collection of wholesale prices, and we try to solve the privacy problem, the contract problem, by saying that it could be done by a third party. So we did boldly step up and say, gather wholesale prices, and we are acknowledging price is only one aspect of competition. Shouldn't we just do both?
Yep.
I mean, I think that's the best solution, I think, to the problem, but As I contemplate this, I suspect that there may be other points of view, such as the sort that Wendy has put forward, which shades and angles the things to measure in the way they're measured differently than even we in this exhaustive process have covered. So I'm going to try not to take it personally when someone comes up to me in Toronto and says that we didn't do a
right. They're going to do that, whether it's in the document or not. And I think what we're trying to do now is to tighten up our document and to give full textual acknowledgement of the non-price means of competition by sticking it right here on Note 5, and then we can cross off that particular public comment.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Cool.
This is Michael for the record. I would agree with putting it in Note 5, and I'll note that the added 3.11 in the actual metrics specifically relates then to the qualitative assessment of non-price competition, which is undefined insofar as that may be defined by the review group when it comes time, if there are other measures that they wish to apply.
Right, because they have to design that study, right, Michael?
Right, and I think the solution of putting it in Note 5, it does gain a prominence, and at the same time, it is not contradictory to the fact that we've put in these metrics looking at wholesale and retail prices.
Hey, this is Barry. Very good. I've noted that. I'll make the edit to the at the end of the call and send out the latest version. So far I have two edits, the inclusion of Evan's comment and then the update to Note 5 of our definitions. So that concludes our action items. We'll now move into review of the advice letter itself. The latest version, 1.91, was sent out on Sunday. I'm sure it's not as much time as we had hoped for everybody to review. So I'm not sure how the working group would like to proceed in reviewing this final draft. Do we want to actually start top to bottom and read through it silently, or do we just open up the floor for any suggested edits? How would the working group like to proceed in this review?
I'd like to recommend you bring up a page and ask if anybody has any comments, but I don't think we want to take the time to read it silently. I think most of the folks on this call have already, given it a read.
Okay, very good. Just to make things easier, give me a minute, and I will put up a clean version so that's easier on the eyes.
While you're waiting to do that, Michael Graham asks a really good question about the working group rules under the working group procedures in the GNSO as to when a minority report or minority position, when and how it's included in a working group report. Where would we get that from, our charter?
No, from the guidelines. And I had that link open in the last report, in the last meeting I was at. Olivia, do you still have access to that Adobe Connect room? I'm working on a tablet, so I can't open up too many screens.
Let me try to find it for you, and then...
Yeah, because but if memory serves, the minority report can is at the discretion of the chair, accepted from any working group member in any report.
Yeah, so the way you do methodology is there's full consensus, strong support but significant opposition, divergence,
mm-hmm.
then a minority view. And a minority view refers to a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation. This can happen in response to a consensus and no consensus.
Yep.
So I guess we are in a...
minority view on that.
No, where a small number of people support their recommendation. We don't have that.
No, we have the opposite.
No. I mean, read it again. A minority view refers to a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation. I think we say we have a consensus is, quote, a position where only a small minority disagrees, but most agree. That's consensus. It's one step short of full consensus. It's a bit much to paste in. What if I put the hyperlink in the chat and everybody can bring it up? Okay, it's in the chat. Oh, great. Look at the length of that hyperlink.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, Steve. Cheryl here. I had to step away for a brief moment during that sentence. The question Michael was raising was actually less about, by my reading of it, those five definitions of what is the degree of consensus in a recommendation under the GNSO guidelines, and more about when is a minority report. So when he's put in minority position, that's kind of different to an appendix of a minority report, because a minority report is actually a dissent report from a minority of the work group. A minority position is one of the five definitions you read out.
Right, and this is Michael, and I'm just looking at the headline of Appendix C where we call it, the following is a dissent position from the NCSG, and
I think that's appropriately labeled as that.
Yeah, but dissent position doesn't even a defined word in the guidelines, so we're just inventing terms. Shouldn't be.
But that's because it's, well, in fact, what we have, when only one person, all right, let's assume, but if we classify both Evan and Wendy as dissenters, then we have, under the definitions of GNSO, near consensus.
No, the word near consensus isn't there. There's full consensus, and we would have consensus.
Consensus, yes.
Okay.
I think we should put that in the report. We have, and this would go right above the place where Barry calls out Wendy. We would say the working group has achieved consensus, and then paste in the definition of consensus from the working group guideline. Like that, Cheryl?
Absolutely. Happy as a pig in mud with that. Thanks, Steve.
Beautiful. And it was said, a position, quote, a position where only a small minority disagrees, but most agree.
Yep.
So we have fit the definition of that. And then after that quote, Barry, you could say that the disagreement of two working group members is contained in Appendix C.
Perfect.
And then, Michael, again, Cheryl, just for clarity, from what you have posted, it sounds as though that there was not a consensus vote or a vote on whether this was the NCSC position that it had been proposed.
Correct. And I don't think we need to go there, and that actually doesn't matter. It is still a minority report of the working group, and that's fine.
Right. So, but should it identify Wendy rather than
No.
I believe we should just say the dissent of two working group members is in Appendix C without saying NCSG, since we have no idea.
That's right. And then the fact that NCSG has sent it, the fact that that is sent under NCSG's header is NCSG's issue. If I want to, and I may, make a fuss over that, it's dirty laundry in that area.
Okay.
We don't need to deal with it.
Olivier?
Thank you, Barry. It's Olivier. Just to remind, Cheryl has said minority report. It's
dissent position.
No, it's minority view is the name of...
I want to say minority.
What is there?
Not
refers to a proposal where a small number of people support the recommendation.
We don't want to confuse anybody by saying that, then.
Yeah. No.
Well, but what I was going to say is to have that appendix that we refer to, the appendix itself would be called minority view.
So I think that's no good. That's not in the guidelines for GSO.
So
take a look at the chat. I just pasted what I believe would solve this in the chat.
Yeah.
I don't know if, Olivier, do you have access to the chat, or shall I read it?
I do, yeah, because I clicked on your huge link to...
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
So that kind of zapped my eyes already, but let me try and get my composure back.
Barry, if I may, just let me respond to Olivier. I would avoid the use of words that are defined terms in the GNSO workgroup guidelines other than consensus, and I think what Steve's written serves it well.
Okay, so, but why would we use dissenting position? Because that's not actually defined anywhere.
Because it is a dissenting position, right? A minority view would be if the report from us, let's assume it's not an advice letter, let's assume it's something, you know, going towards a PDP or something else, right? Then the advice to the GNSO Council from this work group would be that there is a minority view with an associated recommendation, blah, blah, blah. And that's a very different beast than what we have here.
You're right, Cheryl, because they did not do the work.
Correct.
Of coming up with an alternative recommendation that would merit the label minority view. It's simply a gripe, a dissent.
Correct.
So a minority view, I can see here, it says refers to a proposal, and there is
exactly.
No proposal there.
In the absence of a proposal, then this is the best way to deal with it.
I'm super impressed. Thank you.
Phew.
How's everybody feel about the text then in the bottom of the chat? And that would go at the bottom of page 3.
I think that works well. And Steve, I think this is something, if I can just sort of beat this thing to death, that staff, and I know, Barry, you're good at it, but we need to make sure all the staff managing the reporting from various work groups for a while, we have to be so particular about this sort of thing until everyone gets used to the guidelines. They're pretty fresh. I mean, the ink's only just dry. And we need to, you know, I mean, some of us lived and breathed developing them, but the majority of the GNSO membership of various constituencies will only, you know, discover them as they're reading something that gets their hackles up. And so we really need to be particular in the reporting processes to just sort of beat this language very carefully, at least, I think, for the next 18 months or more.
Okay, this is Barry. So I've got the updates requested. I'll modify the anchor on page 3 per Steve's suggestion there and point to Appendix C and then the two other updates so far.
Yeah, Barry, it's Michael. I made a couple small little grammatic revisions, if that's okay with you, Steve, in the chat.
It looks like a friendly amendment to me, Steve.
Indeed. And Barry, could you footnote the guidelines, not the summary of the guidelines, but the actual guidelines and the page number so they know where we got that definition I stuck into the chat?
Well worthwhile, mate. Perfect.
10-4.
Okay, shall we move on to reviewing the final advice letter, minus the three edits that we've discovered so far? Very good. So here we are on page one, and would working group members prefer to scroll on their own or me scroll for you?
You do for us.
Okay. So the first section is the background, basically where we've come from, how we got here, the mention of the articles within the affirmation of commitments, the fact that the AOC did not define the terms of CPCCC. By the way, I'm making an executive call that the final, what do you call it, not acronym, but it's going to be CPCCC, Consumer Trust, Consumer Choice, and Competition.
Oh, an executive decision at last.
Yes. although we didn't highlight it in here, as I've mentioned, we're developing staff implementation notes, and I'm going to call that out so that it starts to get born from there when it gets passed up to the board and the future review teams.
Yay, team. Okay. I like to be labeled.
Okay, moving on to page two, which is the board resolution that got us here and how we were formed, chartered by the GNSO, and we got a link to the charter there.
Barry, in the first paragraph of our actual language, June 2011, put in the E, take out the hyphen, and have a space.
Got it. Thank you.
My dumb question was, you've checked all these links are working, haven't you?
I will do one last.
Because I haven't, and it's something I'm toey about, because it, you know, yeah. Cut.
And in the next paragraph, Barry, I have a question. It's Michael. And this may be a ICANN practice. Referring to GNSO, et cetera, as whom rather than which? We personify the groups.
I practically failed English, so I'll leave the experts.
Dan, I'm trying to find the paragraph.
It was second to full on.
John, I'm going to vote with Michael on which.
Yeah, fifth line down, Cheryl. Out in the middle of it.
Okay. Yeah, each of them, which, yeah.
And another note
which,
on this as well.
Yeah, unless we have godlike status, and then we should have it capital W.
It's a royal witch.
Hey, now that's me, you be careful. Oh, that's a different spelling, sorry. Sorry, did you say witch or bitch?
I'm just letting that hang.
Now, wait. In that paragraph, which starts with the Consumer Trust, Choice, and Competition Working Group, it's Olivia here, always start endorsed by the ALAC and CCNSO, and also for consideration by the GNSO, CCNSO, ALAC, and ALAC, GAC.
You want a Z in there, do you? Okay.
There's always a Z before. The GNSO in the previous previous paragraph.
But Olivier, I mean, where would it stop? It's the GNSO, the ALAC, the GAC, the CCNSO.
No, just
let's not use any of them. Let's be consistent and not use the at all.
Well, actually, the consistent is in the previous paragraphs, the first in the list is always preceded by the.
Yeah, the first in the list.
I'm not saying put it before everything, but
oh, all right, okay.
but just the ALAC and CCNSO, DGNSO, CCNSO, GAC, and ALAC.
I've learned to alleviate the fact that he thinks in at least two languages. It's much easier to let him do the grammar.
I'll defer.
Okay, so I've added D in two places, in sentence two before the ALAC, and then in sentence three before the GNSO.
Can we do a search through the whole letter at a later point and just make sure that is consistent? I'm not sure whether you can just put in, might be easy to do it physically. Let's try and make sure we... Yeah.
You can't do it automatically because when you have by the ALAC and CCNSO,
don't
want...
Oh, come on, team. Let's get moving.
Get going. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. The next statement, working group understands the purpose of this advice. Understand that the advice does not consider any potential consequences of measuring performance. But
yeah, I have another nit there in that the second line, an attempt at identifying metrics. I wondered if, since we put in such effort, it should read an attempt to identify metrics.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. God, I just shrunk my screen. Oh, that's better.
And I guess the next line, the recommendations, plural, do not convey as opposed to...
Does.
I'm going to be picky about the again. The working group understands that the purpose of this advice is to provide ICANN's board with definitions. Actually, it's the ICANN board with definitions.
Oh, come on.
Capital V.
Possessive. When you have a possessive, you don't need the.
But it's not ICANN's board.
Yeah, and before we've got the ICANN board, see that, and at least two other places, so that seems to be the convention for that.
Sorry, I'm really picky.
It is also a last run through, so I'm not too concerned. I think we should do it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So where does the last D need to go to again?
The paragraph starting with the working group understands that the purpose of this advice is to provide ICANN board with definitions, measures, and targets.
All right, thank you. Okay, moving on, working group attempted to stay true. In addition, the working group anticipates.
Does the B get capitalized there?
In board?
Yeah. We do elsewhere. It's not consistent.
Yeah, well, we've got the ICANN board, it may be lowercase. I see at least one lowercase, but where we've got board alone above that, it's capitalized. Go figure.
And then when, look, two paragraphs down begins the ICANN board.
I would almost say to just scan that, and board should always be capitalized.
Absolutely.
Nice use, identify the ICANN board.
Yep.
They call that I tend to capitalize like William Blake, so.
Okay. And for those of us who are not English majors?
Oh, whatever he thought was important, he would capitalize. Even.
Oh, God, I do that too.
Uh-huh.
Now I know who to attest it to. Okay, great.
I did that until...
interesting.
I did that until one of my English teachers pointed out that I was not William Blake.
Ah, you see, no teacher ever pointed that out to me, so that's their problem.
And I guess students aren't allowed to have role models. Okay, the ICANN board should also... And lastly, it is essential.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, moving on to scope of this advice. The working group charter adopted. The working group acknowledges that the limited scope.
Shouldn't charter be uppercase?
The defined terms, so yes, I think it should be.
Alternate methods of accessing internet. The GAC has previously stated.
In the second line, that second sentence in comments on insert the before draft.
And why is advice capitalized and not draft capitalized? Can't it one or the other, I would have thought.
And how does the working group feel? Should it always be lowercase or uppercase for draft advice? Or
anything
advice?
From the U.S. government has to be uppercase.
And we can
there's a little bit of a delay there. Yeah.
And coming from a Frenchman, that's a bizarre thing to say, isn't it?
Okay, moving on to community representation. Taking note that we'll be modifying the second paragraph.
Yeah.
What is the NCA groups?
The non-com advisors, isn't it?
The what? Non-commercial, I'd have thought. Sorry, NCA?
Nominating committee, right?
Yeah, nominating committee advisor group. I didn't know that was an actual group.
Do we have a member from non-com?
Nope. Nope, you don't.
Yeah, we had Carlos Aguirre with NCA.
But he's not nom. Oh, you mean that's how your nomenclature in GNSO Council identifies him?
I guess so.
Because he's just a councillor of the GNSO, I thought.
Yeah, but he got there from NOMCOM. He's the NOMCOM.
Okay, that's just nomenclature, which certainly I haven't associated with that. Okay, fine. I assumed in ALAC world, once you're ALAC, we don't care where you come from, but GNSO is different. Okay, fine. Thanks for that.
Okay, moving on to process for developing the advice. The working group began.
Yep.
In addition
really
to it...
It has been a year, hasn't it?
I was going to say, has it been that long? Or, has it only been that long?
Well, and the interesting thing is when you look back at the original board resolution, I think they wanted something by San Francisco.
Yep, they did. By the SFO meeting, we were supposed to have it done.
In addition to its biweekly...
Mm-hmm.
The initial draft of advice. All right, moving into the heart of the document, advice on definitions, as its initial task.
Mm-hmm. Page breaking might dictate that you begin a new page with advice on definitions. So that all the definitions show on the face of one page. Okay?
Done. Are we sure we don't want to modify the definition of consumer anymore?
Barry, you're not funny.
Consistent with the AOC? The definition focuses not on the nature of an entity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got it.
So, you know, if we're going to say for the nature of an entity, then it ought to be, but rather on the role it plays, or it, yeah, right? So an entity is singular?
Oh, as opposed to the lie. Yep. Okay, I see.
I haven't had this much fun since middle school.
Barry, go to the definition of consumer trust. Next page. In an edit that I gave to Barry right away when he circulated this, I changed the word proposed to stated purpose. Instead of proposed purpose, I put stated purpose. And I thought I owed you all an explanation for that, because their stated purpose comes up two ways. They will state a purpose in their application under question 18. And over time, if it's not a community TLD, it's allowed to change its stated purpose on the GTLD's website and the text that they use to tell potential registrants and users what their TLD is all about. So the word stated purpose is broader and more dynamic. It'll pick up changes they make over time.
Right.
Is everyone okay with that?
Yeah, Michael, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's a defined term almost, isn't it? Because
Proposed purpose makes it feel like it only echoed back to those applications.
218. Yep.
Okay,
no, good idea.
Consumer choice and competition. I think those are nailed down.
Oh, you're not going to suggest we redo those as well, Barry?
I was talking in general. They're all a game. Okay, notes on these definitions. Note one. Note two.
I had a question down in the new language that begins third, consumers, the next to the last line, which reads, I guess it's the last sentence. If consumers believe that new GTLDs are failing to prevent, as we revise this, we were also looking at ICANN's compliance responsibility, so I was wondering, should that read, if consumers believe that new GTLDs or ICANN are failing to prevent these abuses. Is that appropriate there?
I don't think so, because ICANN doesn't police the content of websites.
Okay, so it would be preventing abuses, it would be retaliating.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to our matrix.
Just noted that with the page break on the screen, we had the top line of that on the last page as well as here. I assume that can be tidied, at least on my screen. It started with trust, who trust, trustee, who trust what aspect. Is that deliberate or accidental?
It's a setting in the table that if it spans two pages, it'll repeat the title. Now that we added the page break, I think it all shows up on one page.
Thank you. Tough.
And moving on to note three.
Hey, team, I wanted to let you know that I think it was Carlos, way back, perhaps a year earlier this year, had a paragraph in there where he said that competition is closely related to the idea of consumer choice. They can be seen as two parts of the same whole since they both touch providers and consumers. All stakeholders should have an interest in providing choice and avoiding monopoly in order to create an open and informed market for all participants. And at one time, Carlos had felt strongly about that and hasn't been part of our group since February. And so I took the bold step of deleting what I believe was a completely spurious comment that doesn't really contribute to the report at the risk of maybe upsetting Carlos. Does anyone feel that we need to retain that particular comment? And I can read it back or paste it in the chat.
So, Cheryl here, I do not feel we need to retain it, but then I should also declare that I'm not a free market economy fan. So.
Well, this is Michael, and as you were reading it, Steve, it seemed to me to be an aspirational statement for what it would do rather than measuring whether it exists.
Yes.
So I would agree with leaving it out, leaving the language as revised here.
I feel like, you know what, it's not so much aspirational, Michael, is clarifying, because all of us struggled for the first month at creating a distinction between choice and competition. Because when you have choices among competing things, how do you know which is the choice and which is the competition? So at the time, there was just that general confusion, and I think Carlos had even articulated his concerns in Spanish, and then I got somebody to translate it for us, and that's what we came up with. But I feel like we've moved so far past that to where we have pretty significant explanation of the fact that, for us, competition is about supplier.
Yep.
So I think we could drop it out.
Yep, I agree. And if there's an issue raised, we wear it. I'll stand there and say, you know, tough shit.
Note 4 is new. You guys asked me to do a comment.
Ah, yes.
The word meaningful.
Yeah.
You guys, I'll give you a second to read note 4 in case you haven't already.
The only question I had on that is in the sentence, second line of note 4, where it says, are relevant to the registrant's desired domain name.
You could take out desired. Yeah, I was thinking there that I was where I wanted to register my Del Bianco bike shop.
I'm just not sure about the use of desired.
Yeah, take out desired. That's fine. Good idea. And I tried to do two sentences. One was for registrants, and the other was for users, because meaningful choices would show up only when they're presented with multiple hyperlinks to pick from, and they might look at the TLD to decide which to choose.
From putting on my internet user representative hat, thank you for that.
Does it make sense, Cheryl, the way it's written there?
It does to me, but let's hear from Olivier.
Yeah, it does for me as well.
Steve, I'm going to post a minor revision just for clarification of that first part of it, though. Hang on.
While Michael's doing that, I'll refer to you guys to the first line of note 5, which is where I preserved a little bit of what Carlos had put in back in February. First sentence.
And he could, he can feel ownership of that. That's fine.
It's an idea here. I also think that this really goes in line with the view of the U.S. government as well, with their demand on competition and free market, etc. So it needs to be quite clear on that.
Yep, happy with note 5, first lot. Remembering we've now made a modification unwritten yet to that at today's meeting.
So, you know, you're right, it's unwritten, but didn't Barry in the comment tool, the comment review tool, didn't we have a specific text you were going to paste in under 5?
Can we just make sure that the language...
Right. Make sure it fits, so we don't have to go back and do this.
Yeah. Just someone needs to own that action item to make sure Note 5 blends properly.
I'll do it with you, Barry. After you paste in, I can take a first look.
And in that, I use refers to because I hated having means right after meaningful. But that's what you were getting at, wasn't it, Steve? That it means that registrants have a real choice among TLDs that are relevant to the registrant's domain name. And I think I was going towards more of it phrased as a definition rather than an example, which is how you...
I know, but there are two entities for whom we want things to be meaningful. The first entity is a registrant, and the second entity is a user. And those are both defined together as what we call consumers.
Okay, then it'd be easier. So that, leaving your language, meaningful choices for a registrant would be... when they have the option of choosing among.
That's fine.
That also echoes exactly what you've got down, meaningful choices.
Yes.
Would be. That's fine, Michael.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be it.
So what it's supposed to say, for internet users, meaningful choices.
That stays just as it is, one up above in the context. I guess maybe phrase it the same way. So in the definition of consumer choice, well, no, meaningful choices for registrants, since we're talking, keep that parallel with internet users, registrants would be when they have an option of choice among TLDs, or an option of choosing. I mean, it's basically just changing the for a, or the is, would be, so that it's echoing that second sentence down there.
Okay, we better get moving, though. We're already an hour into this. Let's go. You got that, Barry?
For note 4, I didn't capture what you wanted for note 5.
Yeah, for note 4, Michael Graham is suggesting the would-be.
I got those.
Got it.
But you were talking
the
note 5.
The text that you were going to paste under 5 is the text that came from the comment review tool that you had up about an hour ago. And after it's pasted in, give me a chance to look at it, me, Cheryl, anybody, to see if it fits well with the way Note 5 is written. We don't want it to look clumsy.
All right, understood. Okay, moving on to Notes 6, 7, and 8.
Under Note 6, a question I would have is, we have said particularly, CCTLDs are potential competitors, particularly where it's marketed to registrants around the world. By saying it that way, I hope we're not inferring that they're not competitive when they're marketed just in their own country, because .us is competitive with .com, .uk is competitive with .biz. Do you think we ought to drop everything after the comma so that we don't imply that competition only occurs with things like ME and CO?
Michael here. My reading of this is that it is looking at those ccTLDs that do not restrict themselves to registrants within that country but are international in scope.
If that's the inference, Michael, we ought to take off everything after the comma, because we also mean to imply that ccTLDs are competitors even when they're marketed just to their own country. They are definitely a choice, a competing choice for a registrant or for a user. In Germany, they might be much more inclined to look at .de than .org or .biz or .com. So I would think we want to drop everything after the comma.
Yeah, I agree with that. I see why we had the second part of the sentence in, but I think it opens up more confusion than it solves. So let's drop after GTLDs.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, that makes sense, too, with the addition of potential in there that we had made.
Note 7.
We went over 7 and 8 several weeks ago.
I thought we'd done those pretty well.
Okay, moving on to advice on measures and 3-year targets for defined terms.
The only thing, the next to the last line in the first paragraph, exception to use of, again, I was thinking insert the before use, with exception to the use of geographic names.
Okay.
Yep.
The board resolution. Working group suggests. Our example table.
Is there a risk that people will read our example table and think that those are actual metrics we're suggesting? And if so, how do we make sure they understand this is just a theoretical example?
Is there a way of putting a big example?
Yeah, like you put big draft across, you know, stamp.
Like across that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, no. Let's not do a watermark.
Oh, why not?
Oh.
How about I just bold, for example, a 3-year target and bold in the table header.
And then in the table header, say theoretical example.
Yeah, I'm happy with adding theoretical in there. Yeah. And the table head is already bold, so, you know, guys.
Yep, okay, good. Let's make sure that the for example line is, that the table follows immediately under it in terms of pagination, Barry.
Right.
Yeah, that goes with my last time I asked that. I'm assuming that it'll be fixed with that new repage.
Okay, per the board resolution request,
no problem.
Will the working group be upset that if I actually bulletize these terms?
Oh, no, I prefer you to.
Hey, yeah, that's fine. In the previous one, we said suggesting applicable targets. We probably should say appropriate targets. Because we could have come up with applicable targets for things like prices, but we didn't think it was appropriate to do that.
Okay, done. Okay, moving on to measures of consumer trust.
This should be a start of a new page.
Yeah, great.
Table stays together. Thank you.
Measures related to confidence in registrations and resolutions.
Does that
number 1.3? I think we messed this up. It's really not extensible provisioning protocol. It's really the what's called the shared registration services, which uses EPP. So it should be percentage of service availability for shared registration services, and put in parens SRS. And if we want, we can say using
using
extensible provisioning protocol.
Is that going to
flip the protocol doesn't have an SLA. The shared registration services have an SLA.
Adding that line in, and I'm happy to add that line in, what's going to happen to, what happens to the table anyway? Now we've done the repagination, that table's going to be split. We need to be careful where that table splits.
True enough.
And I'm happy to split it, but if we're going to split it anywhere, it should be at the measures related to confidence line.
Agreed. Agreed. The big, bold gray bars are a better place to split than in the middle of one.
Terrific. Thank you.
In 1.4, I did some editing of the way we were listing the kinds of things the survey could do.
Hey, this is John. I had thought that I'd be able to stay connected while on the move, because I do need to move my location. But the process we're in right now suggests that that's not going to be very valuable for the group. So I'm going to ring off. I can arbitrate any grammatical debates that might arise after I leave. But I apologize for having to do that. But I just don't think it would be worth your while if I stayed on without access to the document.
John, did you have any other comments when you reviewed the latest drafts? You think we're okay?
You know, it's pretty clear just based on this experience that there are probably a couple of things that I would probably see that I didn't see when I read it, but I can't imagine it would rise to the level of changing the intent.
And so, this is Barry. John, before you leave, essentially we'll go ahead and talk about closing this out. So we'll finish reviewing the document today. I'm going to send it out to the list tonight and give working group members Wednesday and Thursday for any last minute edits that would be conducted on the list. If an edit is sent in and I hear no objections by Friday, then I'll incorporate that change into the final draft. I'm hoping by Friday morning U.S. time I'll have the final draft available, and then I'll send those over to you to pass along to the GNSO Council.
Terrific.
And Barry, and since John Berard is one of the counselors, and he's the liaison here, shouldn't we take a quick break here, put a hold on this, bring up the council advice letter, the council conveyance letter, so John can look at that and we ought to decide what timeline to put in there. You know what I mean?
I agree. I was actually going to bring that up.
John Berard, can you give us another 5 minutes?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. Good call, Steve.
So basically, you know, it's really a simple message. You know, this is why we're here, why this is important. The good stuff is the possible next steps. I included the word possible because I don't want us to sound like we're dictating what they should do, but hopefully they will do it. So basically, possible next steps, by the 6th of September, I believe, we have to have all documents in to the council to meet the deadline. I'll make sure that it's on the agenda for a 20-minute period. 13 September is the GNSO Council meeting, and I'm kind of denoting 10 minutes for a quick presentation and 10 minutes for discussion. I imagine if we're going to present this, John, would you want to do it, or should we have Steve come on and do a quick 10-minute presentation?
Well, I guess that really depends upon what we want to have happen. I can feign strategic ignorance that Steve won't be able to feign.
The intent of bringing it up for review at this council meeting is so that they can just talk about it. We're not looking for any action, but this is merely a preparation for action at the Toronto meeting. I don't think if we don't allow the council to discuss it, then we won't get anywhere in Toronto.
Mm. All right. No, I think you're right. Let's see.
We anticipate by Toronto that John would introduce a motion where council would endorse this advice and send it on to the board, right?
Right. You know, in fact, maybe what we could do for the 13th is to give them, show them the text of that motion. So here's the report, here's an overview, and here's the motion that will be on the table for Toronto.
What's everybody think about that? Is that too presumptive? It'll drive Wendy crazy.
But my point would be that it gives everybody to consider it. It also provides a lot of opportunity for friendly amendments, you know, for consideration that would allow us to move forward, even if changes needed to be made.
Okay, fine by me.
Very good.
It might be, John, that you compose the motion. It's going to be relatively short, you know, whereas on the affirmation, whereas on the resolution from the board, and then therefore resolved that the following advice letter be conveyed to the board.
All right, so let's see. Today is the 14th. Yeah. We should have the letter done by the 17th. I don't see any reason why, my goodness, we will have 2 weeks, more than 2 weeks, to make sure that we have it all nailed down.
And John, I'll put together a first draft of the motion and then just send it over to you. We don't need to submit the draft motion when we submit the advice letter. We'll submit the draft motion when we incorporate it into the agenda.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, no, I agree.
Okay, so then on the 21st of September, basically the GNSO Council will determine a path forward. I'll actually modify this 21 September and fold it into the 13 September since we're going to have a draft motion. 9 October is to submit any final materials for the council consideration for the Toronto meeting. We'll have already had the letter submitted, the draft motion submitted, so we probably have already accomplished that, but I'll keep that milestone in there just in case. 13 October is the Saturday session in Toronto, and
that would be a good one for Steve to participate in. Just in specific questions, but you know, my hope is would be that we could have this on the consent agenda for the public meeting.
Right, and then.
Maybe in hope and die in despair, isn't that the sign?
Terry, you're dismissing it out of hand that easily?
That wasn't my laugh.
Oh, whose was it?
And then lastly, on the 17 October council meeting, public council meeting, the Wednesday session, either consent agenda or regular agenda item that's moved forward. So I'll just ask the working group what we're outlining here in next steps. Is this at any way too presumptive of us to move this forward to the council?
In keeping with the discussion so far, it is presumptive, but it is not presumptuous.
Okay.
All right. Let's look at the timelines. Barry's done a lot of work on this.
All right, I'll see you guys.
John, we do need you for this, if you can possibly hang. This is part of the letter.
Yeah. You're killing me, Stephen. I'm going to have to speed now. Okay, what do I need to look at?
Barry has done a lot of work on this, and the timeline he has up in front of you, do you still have the Adobe up, John?
I do.
Great. So look at this one, and it's complex as hell. It's got like five or six little notes in it. But I talked with Barry about it over the weekend, and he's right. It takes this much nuance to convey this crazy timeline. And I'll let Barry walk you through this.
So in short, the key elements to this picture are the numbered circles. One, obviously, the GNSO carries the advice letter up to the board. The board will consider it over time. Eventually, they're going to act on it. And if they act accordingly, they'll advise staff to begin recording what metrics are possible. And that'll also be the gateway for number three, where at some point in time, the future review team will be formed. Now, the key language in 9.3 is 1 year after the first delegation, a review will begin. The problem is they won't have any metrics to review with. So what I'll be incorporating into the staff implementation notes is that AOC team be formed the first day of delegation, because it will take them a year to finalize all of the metric requirements for this to get implemented in. And in parallel to that future review team can not only start to outline the requirements of these metrics, but can also do the other aspect of their task, and that's to begin the evaluation of the application and evaluation process for new GPLDs. So the key takeaway here is between four is after about 1 year of establishing the requirements, they'll pass those requirements back up to ICANN to implement that metrics framework, and it'll take ICANN probably 9 months to a year to implement, perhaps longer, but I'm going to use a year, as to which they'll complete the metrics framework, pass it back down to the review team, and then the review team actually starts to conduct their formal review. And so
that's 4 years from now.
It would begin in third quarter of 2016.
3 years from now. So essentially, the motion we hope will pass in October of 2012, and the review team will begin its work in, say, October of 2015.
Of 2014.
I thought, if I'm looking at the arrow, so when will we get the first read on whether the world is as rosy as we hope?
They're allowed to start their review 1 year after the first delegation. And so
right.
If you look below number four, and the tan thin box is when they
yeah.
can actually start their review, but they still won't have data to conduct their review. They may have data on the application and evaluation processes, and maybe they can
right.
start there. But my gut tells me it's going to take ICANN or third parties, whoever, 2 years to build out this metric framework before
yeah.
a real review can be performed. And that's the takeaway message here, and that's why I'm trying to push that the review team get formed early to build the requirements to conduct that review in the future.
Yeah. All right.
Offline, just take a more granular look at this and the corresponding notes and send back any feedback you have, and I can adjust the picture to make the dates look more appropriate or something along those lines if need be.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Cheryl here. I'm happy with this approach, and I just want to ask one clarifying question. When you talked about staff implementation and your proposal, which I wholeheartedly agree with, you get the review team up and running at the earliest physical possible ability, you're talking about advice to Denise, who will then advise the chairman of the board and the GAC chair, because it's actually their job to get the RT done.
Correct. So specifically, I'm building a complimentary paper to the advice letter on ICANN internals' view on how they can implement this. And just so everybody understands, it's strictly only a how, not whether we should or shouldn't on some of the metrics.
Sure. Yeah.
And so the composition of this implementation notes will be, you know, we accept the definitions, we accept the metrics, and here's what it's probably going to take on a first thin cut of how it would take, how much and how long it would take ICANN to implement this. And it would just be a cursory review. Anyway, I'm creating the first draft. We'll be sending it around to the different SMEs within ICANN, such as the registry team, the registrar team, compliance, legal, et cetera, et cetera, because they're all inputs to this metric framework. Once I get all of their feedback in and we're happy with the final version, yes, then we'll submit it to Denise. That'll be submitted to the board, and I hope that that is submitted to the board at the exact time the GNSO Council submits the advice letter to the board.
Brilliant.
So that they have both documents. And from there, then it's up to the board with however they care to approach this.
Okay. That's hugely important. And I want to just, you know, thoroughly support you on that. If at all possible, it would be good if ALAC can get its timing in synchronicity there as well. And I will do my best as a liaison to the CCNSO Council to try and push them in the same direction. So if you can at least unofficially share your ideal dates very specifically as we get to that point, then Olivia can sort of micromanage the ALAC, and I'll do my best to poke sharp pointy sticks at the CCNSO Council.
Right. So if our timeline or our above next steps here come true, it would be, you know, probably the week after Toronto that the council would send it up to the board. So let's just call it Halloween when the council would submit the advice letter to the board.
Appropriate on so many levels, and that also means that I can raise it in council meetings with the CCNSO during Toronto, and Olivia can try and herd the cats in the ALAC in the same direction. And we might also, Olivia, be able to interact effectively with the GAC as well on that.
And, Olivia, you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Barry. It's Olivia. Yes, Cheryl, we I think we could even talk about these with the GAC and alert them to this prior to things taking place. So in Toronto, that could be one of the subjects that we could discuss with the GAC. I was just going to ask one question on the timeline here. I mean, this is, are we going to send this timeline over?
Part of the letter.
This is Barry. Yes, it was meant to be a complimentary attachment to provide direction to the council on how to proceed.
Okay. I mean, I know you've put the, you've added all of those footnotes, but I still find it to be somehow a bit confusing for people. I understand it, but I can just, putting myself in the shoes of a reader, they might think, okay, this is a little confusing. There is one thing which is not quite clear here, which is when will the first actual report, the first results be shown, be produced, not the actual recording of metrics, but the first report that will come out for public consumption. Is this going to be a three-year thing? In other words, we have to wait 3 years until there is any kind of feedback as to whether this first batch has been, or first round has been successful. The reason why I ask for this is because I've already heard several people comment on this, saying, does this mean that we're not going to have any other round for at least 3 years, if not more than that? And that introduces a lot of discussion and questions and angst in the community.
This is Barry. A couple of comments. I can't speak for the new GTLD team with respect to the next round. Per the African guidebook, I believe it said either 12 or 18 months from the close of the last application of the previous application window. The confidence on that occurring is probably very low, and I suspect that the community would want some form of review to occur before the next window opens. But that's my own personal speculation. the second point I'd like to make, I didn't put on this chart other than compare targets, which is number six, because at this point I have no idea. I mean, we don't even know who the review team is, regardless, yep, let alone how much of an analysis they're really going to be doing other than just reading the metrics. So it's very hard to put a date down as to when that final review would occur and what it would look like.
Cheryl Hibiri and Olivier, we're skating very close to what is really review team business in that area. That said, having served on a review team, there is usually fairly close NTIA involvement in the review teams they care about, and I know that by then it'll be a different, or it may be a different set of representatives, so that might change. But there is no reason why a preliminary report can't come out early. It's almost up to those who want an earlier next round to make sure their voice is heard effectively if the activities of the review team on these metrics is a delimiting factor. But it's not our business, it's their business.
Understood. Thank you.
That's, by the way, all good, Barry, and I think with Olivier's point on it still being relatively complex, I'm not sure you can get it any more simple. We've just got to talk them through, so I think John's got to be ready to talk them through and take their little hands and get a piece of paper and a whiteboard marker and, you know, draw them another diagram if needs be.
Right, and perhaps I'll suggest to John that we co-present, and I can at least present the details of that to try to help make it a little bit more clear to the council.
Excellent plan.
Okay, back to reviewing the consumer trust metrics. I think we had stopped around 1.4.
Yep, we're up to 1.5.
And then we move into measures related to confidence that TLD operators are fulfilling their stated promises and complying with ICANN policies and applicable national laws.
I know we talked about the applicable national laws in earlier notes. You don't want to ask. You don't want to sort of hyperlink that back to that note, just for the idiot's guide. I'm not going to die in a ditch one way or the other, by the way. It was just a passing thought.
Why don't we say see note 3? See note 3 on page 6.
Yeah, okay. Just to close the loop on that, I think it's probably useful.
Barry, 1.9, the second sentence of 1.9 should read URS is available.
Oh, yeah. URS is.
Maybe put it this way, URS is required, not available, is required only in new GTLDs.
Did I miss a discussion on 1.6? Did you resolve that issue?
No, I just jumped around to whatever's on the page.
Oh, okay.
1.9, then we'll go back to 1.6. So, Barry, yeah, URS is required instead of S available, okay?
Got it.
Thanks. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just wondering a similar thing at the end of 1.6, the measure.
Missing.
The measure, this measure, I'm not sure. I'll.
These measures.
This measure.
Oh, it's this measure. Oh, okay.
I would say this measure. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
It's really on both the breach notices, because the U.S. government raised the point that you don't want to wait until there's a formal notice of breach. You want to pick up all the intervening kinds of breach notifications and breach warnings that come out of the compliance department.
Mm.
It may be that it needs to refer to both 1.6 and 1.7. So, Barry, does that argue for repeating the sentence?
I'd rather repeat it than not, especially if we do a page break at the gray line.
Maybe instead of should be included in this measure, it just say should be counted. And then it's even shorter. Should be counted, period. How about that, team? All breach-related notifications should be counted, period. And then repeat that twice, once for six, one, and once
and
for
one. And one for seven. Yep.
Yeah. I was wondering, going back to the gray bar, I wonder if, because we're relying on those to differentiate the sections and also get a message across, if perhaps the text in those might be slightly larger, or I think you said it might already be bold, but in some way stand out a bit more.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind it bold and larger. I think that isn't bolded, and it should be, and I'd be perfectly happy for it to be another point or two up.
It's not going to look...
Well,
I'll play around with it.
Yeah.
Without messing up page breaks and that kind of stuff to make it stand
out. And the same would go for the other grey lines, obviously, Steve. But remember, we've already bumped in a new page break on the page before. So we have a different...
All right.
I think the key message here is every word and sentence and paragraph and page is extremely sensitive and important. The message that we need to convey to everybody is you have to read every word. And, no matter how much we try to PowerPoint various areas of this, it's just not possible. You gotta read it all. Okay, moving on to... Cheryl?
No, I was happy for next.
Okay, 1.8, 1.9. I think we got 1.9.
Yep, we're right for that.
Moving on to 110, 111.
111, I put a lot of work into to clean that up. So you guys ought to give it a good look. And a lot of this came from you, Michael, but we had it all over the place, so I tried to really streamline it.
Yeah, I read it this afternoon. I thought it went well.
I think we're going to catch hell from people like Wendy and even Evan if we don't qualify the nature of an IP claim. Is it just a claim, an assertion? Or is it a valid claim, a validated claim? What's the right modifier to put in front of the word claim so that we raise its legitimacy beyond just bullshit complaints?
Fictitious stuff, yeah.
Well, I had made a note in response to that someplace. It isn't here.
Or validated work?
That there are actually two things. One is claims in general, and the other one is, as you say, valid claims or claims that have been decisions have been issued on or something like that. But there really are two types of measures. I don't know how you get around that, though.
Well, if none of our measures should be just the raw quantity of unvalidated complaints. We just don't want to do that. Let's pick something short of decisions. Often decisions won't be known when there's settlements and so on. It'd be much better to just say some sort of a modifier in front of the word claims. There's really no third-party validator of a claim. Are they properly formed? Are they legal claims?
Are they accepted?
Accepted.
I'm just struggling for a word. Yeah.
Mr. Blake, be creative here.
And you can capitalize it. Feel free.
Quantity of intellectual...
How about legitimate?
I wouldn't use legitimate.
Yeah.
I suppose you could say, and it's a wishy-washy term, quantity of good faith intellectual property claims, which suggests that they are made in good faith, even if a court later finds against them. That doesn't mean it wasn't a good faith claim. And
I can live with that because it takes vexatious and puts it to the side, which is a big part of what we want to do.
Right, and that's what I was thinking of, because that was the objection that I saw was,
yeah,
you know, looking at the vexatious or, you know, reverse domain name.
And
yeah, I'm happy with good faith.
Would that be a hyphenated word or two words?
God. Well, it's not capitalized, I can tell you that.
Yeah, definitely not capitalized. Even I agree with that.
I think two words. Go on to my online dictionary.
Let's put it, if we use good faith, put it only next to the paren 1 paren, where it says relative incidence of good faith IP claims, or IP claims made in good faith, should be measured in three areas. And that way we don't have to repeat the word good faith like 15 times.
No, that's fine.
I'm sorry, Steve, you lost me there.
Ray Word says right in the middle of the 1.11 block, there's a paren 1 paren. Relative incidence
of
good faith IP claims, or relative incidence of IP claims made in good faith,
I
should
like
be measured in three areas.
I think IP claims made in good faith should be measured in three areas.
Yeah, and it should be two words.
Okay.
Okay.
Blake has spoken.
Okay, moving on to 1.12.
Uh-huh.
1.13.
Is there any reason why we've short-formed with regard to? We're not that short of space, and it will not translate well otherwise.
Well, then just say regarding. Right.
Yeah.
One word, regarding applicable
That's
national
fine.
Law.
Okay, got it. And by the way, Cheryl, as soon as Friday morning hits, I will also be submitting a request to have this translated as well.
Okay, so I don't need to bring that up under any other business. Thank you.
Done.
Am I that predictable?
Okay, 1.14.
Move it right along.
On 14, I added the phrase, including takedowns required by law enforcement, because I went back through the U.S. government's second email to us and found a way to address most of the comments that they put in, little things like that.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
So then we should include in the source registry and LEA.
Actually,
yeah,
you're right.
Excellent point.
And I know it's just a silly thing, but you've got honeypot in inverted commas in 1.15, and yet there isn't any explanation footnote, and I'd rather have it footnoted or referenced because it doesn't actually mean a lot in other languages. In fact, it could mean some very interesting things in other languages.
Good point. Now, Olivier, that was one of the things that you and ALAC came up with, and when I read the U.S. government comments, the U.S. government said, don't restrict your spam measures to just honeypot. There may be other ways to get spam counts, and that's why I rephrased 1.15, moving honeypot as one of the ways you could do it, as opposed to the only way to do 1.15. Is that all right with you?
You'll have to come off mute.
I am off mute, I hope. Am I off mute?
Yep. Yes, you are.
Got it. And so that was in preface to what Cheryl just remarked on, is honeypot a universally known phrase? Will it be translated? And is it necessary to even have that here?
It actually, in French, it is. It means the same thing.
Say it
for us. In some languages, it might be quite tasty. It might not mean anything, though.
Yeah, well, actually, I was thinking of some sexual proclivity that might come out of it, too.
But you're Australian. You think of anything being sexual, don't you?
What can I say? We have a small population, but we're an active one.
And you've got a lot of space to fill. I'm not quite sure what we can use there because, yeah, using more than just honeypots, but we could say just which could be measured, for instance, via specialized email addresses. And that would remove the honeypot term.
And if you're going to say specialized email addresses, you could almost go the whole hog, via specialized email addresses and methodologies, because it's specialized methodologies as well as specialized addresses.
Yeah.
So I have it now as quantity and relative incidence of spam from domains and new GTLDs, which could be measured via specialized email addresses and methodologies.
I like it. The Spam House still is the right reference there. Good.
Okay, 16. We've got 11 minutes unless folks can carry on past.
I can extend.
I can as well.
I'm still here.
Me too.
All right, let's go. Press on. Pastor.
16. 17. 18. 19.
Under 18, put LEA under APWG.
Oh, yeah, good point. Would that also not be 117 as well?
Yeah, why not? Let's put them on the hook.
Yeah, they've made the noise. Let them scream in the right way.
16, 17, and 18 get LEA.
Okay.
20. 19.
Yeah, 19's okay.
20.
Note that all these say the word relative incidence, and that means it's relative to the total number of domains. With 1,400 new domains in GTLDs, the overall quantity might be higher, but it's going to be all measured relative to the number of domains.
I was wondering, this is Michael, do we have relative defined as a term?
Page 8, definitions, right in the middle, the ones that you bulleted.
Relative incidence, thank you. Okay.
This is intended to put small or new GTLDs on a comparable basis with experience in larger or more established. Relative incidence of a particular measure would divide the raw data by the total number of registrations in each GTLD zone evaluated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is defined as relative incidence, and I ask because then in 2.1, I know I'm ahead of myself, we use relative share.
That's completely different.
Okay.
Get to that, but it's not the same thing as a relative incidence.
Okay.
Anyone?
The note, go ahead, sorry.
I think 21 and 22 are fine. If we want to get to the note, that's fine by me.
Okay, the note, I know this is from one of our public comments, and I don't remember who or where it is in there, but one community member specifically stated, maybe it was even from our Costa Rica session, that ICANN is, you know, a contracted party as well, and that was the message that I was trying to convey here. And through the review of the public comments, we agreed that that kind of note should be in here, but I think what I have listed here is only my language, so I certainly welcome the correct language.
And I edited this as Elberry after reading the U.S. government's comments because they made the same point.
did you think that the words stable, secure, and predictable governance of the critical internet functions says it, or do you want to actually use the compliance word?
No, I think this is fine the way it is. I'm good with it.
Yeah, I'm happy with it.
I mean, this is Michael. Do we want to place it here? This seems to give it an awful great weight here rather than up in the discussion of the advice on the measures and three-year targets.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that the notes that we have way back in the early part of the document are pretty much notes about definitions only. Then when we get into the metrics, we don't have notes on metrics.
Well, we have that advice on measures and three-year targets, but I guess that's just getting into the definitions and how we're setting up the chart.
Putting on my at-large hat, I actually think it does need elevation to this level. I'm comfortable with it having a stick out on this space.
Okay, I'm fine. I had no problem. I'm just asking.
So where will it show up? Is it going to be simply the last item in the consumer trust table?
That's where it is now. Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
I can draw little roses around it to highlight it.
But please don't make them roses.
All right.
Unless they've got thorns as well.
Next section, choice.
Okay, 2.1.
Two dot two, should it simply be registrar rather than registrars?
Right.
Registrar websites.
You got it?
Yep, that's true.
2.3.
On 2.3, why not take out clear? Understandable is sufficient. I don't think you need clear and understandable.
Yeah, that's redundant.
Okay. 2.4.
This 2.4 language is used a few places.
Right, this is a survey provision, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes up less space as sentencing like that than it would in bullet points, so I'm happy with that. Even though I tend to not like survey, I think that's the best way space-wise to do it.
Hmm.
Unless it's survey should and then dot, 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 and I think that would take up more space.
Okay, 2.5.
Just a question on 2.5. I see the three-year target being split from one page to the other. I guess with a repagination, this will change.
Yeah. I'm assuming that pagination will change because we need those things locked together, and you'd be switching that out at the grey box if you needed to switch it at all.
Right. Okay, 2.7.
Nitpicking, but occasionally we have full stops at the end of these, and often we don't. I don't care which way we go, but consistency would help. I'm not neither way, but it just notice that they don't. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes it doesn't matter, I guess. But
2.7, should we say to the total number of GTLDs in each script rather than the total GTLDs?
Total GTLDs in each script or language, that reads all right.
Well,
that the total GTLDs, as compared to the total GTLDs, it's Olivia here, it's the total number of GTLDs, I guess, we have to look at.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Olivia.
All right, then. Australians drop words and parts of words wherever possible, remember, so don't listen to me on that.
Okay, got made that change, 2.8.
Sorry, in 2.8, when you say quantity, do you mean number or do you mean there? Because a quantity I usually assume is something like a kilo of rice. And
really?
Something that can be
must be a French thing.
Quantity is the you count them up.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a measure, not a qualitative term.
I must be hungry.
Okay, 2.9.
These are the ones we'll have to fight the hardest for.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, the future review team will have to iron out exactly how to capture this, because I think even from our review, it's not completely nailed down how we're going to pull this out of all the data that's available. I think
one of the reasons Barry's timeline shows that big several months of interval while staff develops the systems to capture all this.
Yeah. Or goes to third party.
Correct.
And there will be budgetary implications of going to third party, and that's another good reason to have it as long a startup time as possible, because it may need to go over 2 financial years.
Absolutely, and that is also a section, or not necessarily a section, but a key message in the staff implementation notes. There are several initiatives that are already outlined in the 2012-2013 budget of systems implementations for new GTLDs that will be useful for collecting these metrics, but as well as, you know, there needs to be other specific budget outlays just for this review team to conduct its work and outlining what third-party elements need to be brought in as well.
That's great. Thanks, Barry. 10?
And I think that's the metric that I sent the email on, that Domain Tools had just put up a quick little study on.
Yeah. Did you want to link that in the note there or not, that new study, as an example or not? Online surveys, such as?
It wasn't a survey. They extracted it out of their own zone file data.
Okay, well.
I think it's to be at 2.10. There is a full stop missing after the first sentence.
Oh,
sorry, I joined you late. I'm still here.
Okay, got it.
So you don't want to reference under the analysis in a 2.11 then, taking your point that a survey seems to be external rather than internal. You don't want to link it as an example?
Is that question to Barry?
Yeah, it was, actually.
that's not my decision. If the working group feels that it can go in, I think it's more 2.10 than 2.11.
Okay.
But if the working group feels it's
If I was the review team and I could have some examples to, you know, get myself up to speed with, I think I'd appreciate it. That's all.
Repeat what it is that we would do to 2.10.
Link the new report that very recently emailed? Or link the reference, more to the point, not the report.
Is it really a close fit with this? Because this is about a prior to expansion, so we're supposed to snapshot registrations in the legacy space, park that someplace, and then 3 years out, come back and measure. Is that really what Barry's example did?
It was a snapshot.
It was... Maybe it's not 2.10, but the idea is that it's close to it. They were examining the number of unique registrations and TLDs and the percentages associated with them. And so when you look at .com, for example, I think that their takeaway is that 75% of the .com names do not have a registered domain name in the other TLDs that they've reviewed.
And that's a contemporaneous and not a snapshot history one. So it's tiny bit of a mismatch.
I personally think we should probably not include this in the advice letter because it's promoting maybe a potential vendor or something.
Oh, fair enough on that point. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I see that point for sure. Okay.
Okay, 2.11. Olivier?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I agree. It would promote a vendor. It's Olivier here. Yeah. However, I do question the moderate difficulties. Would you explain? Because I don't know, it just seems to appear that it is a difficult thing to do, but actually it really isn't. These are things which can be done automatically.
This is Barry. I would say that it really will come down to a decision of the review team if they decide it's buy versus build. You can easily buy it from an organization like Domain Tools and get the report. They've already developed the algorithm to identify the uniqueness. I know that ICANN doesn't have anything like that today, and if they decided to do it in-house, it would take development resources to create the algorithm to make that determination about unique domain names. So, maybe moderate difficulty is a little too much, but it is... a little bit resource intensive.
Well, could we add to this tools already exist or something along those lines in the same way as in 2.11, for example, it says obtainable using either ICANN or external survey tools and advice. In,
that's almost the
2.10,
same.
It doesn't say
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, we could repeat that above. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But at the time when we wrote the recommendation, we hadn't seen the domain tools, but now we have seen it, so.
Very different, though. Olivier, I wanted to respond to your point. It's not difficult because of the snapshot. It's difficult because of the multiple moving parts. So take a look in the chat. I just put a proposed replacement. So by this, Olivier, I'm agreeing with you, is that the snapshot itself isn't difficult. The moderate difficulty comes because we have to either program or hire a vendor that would walk through that giant snapshot and check all of the new GTLD space, every single zone, all 1,000 of them, to see where that name is already registered.
And some will have done that. So I just would like to have in there that this could be purchased by ICANN, probably. And it probably will be as well.
And adding what I have there requires snapshot, blank, blank, to the end of that sentence, and then you would add another sentence that's saying...
obtainable using either ICANN's or external tools.
Yeah.
Just the same as we've got on 2.11. Same language.
Yeah, just drop the word survey.
Yeah. External tools and advice. They use exactly the same language. But in 2.11, it says external survey tools.
I know, but you know what? Why didn't we say that for nearly every row?
Because we did it incrementally and we got better at it.
Okay. But it's fairly obvious that the choice for obtaining and reporting may include in-house or outsource. I don't think we want to say that every time that it's applicable. If, on the other hand, Olivier is saying that there is a tool out there that works already, it may be worth mentioning. Olivier, would you be better if I just took out moderate difficulty and just said requires a snapshot of all zones? So we're not even assessing that it's difficult. We're simply indicating that you better do this before delegations begin or we won't have the snapshot.
Yeah, it's Olivia here. Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
So just drop moderate
just
difficulty.
I'm concerned the moderate difficulty part might introduce a barrier to doing it or at least find some people who'd say, oh, well, that's a barrier to doing it, whilst it looks as though this has already been done by some people. A different flavor of it, but,
okay.
You know.
Keep in mind that if the review team ever adopted this stuff and they actually did the review, ICANN is under a significant obligation to implement the recommendations of a review team. They have special status in ICANN due to the affirmation of commitment. So things that, you know, what do the Marines say? The difficult we do right away, the impossible just takes a little longer.
Right.
So I catch your drift that somebody like the council might want to pull back on things that are moderately difficult. But if, in fact, the review team did it, difficulty wouldn't be a barrier. So if we take out moderate difficulty and just go with requires a snapshot, maybe even note, colon, requires snapshot of all legacy GTLD zones before delegation of new GTLDs, sort of a reminder.
Yep.
Go do that sometime in the next several months.
Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah.
Definitely.
The council might not be a barrier. Cost might be. And... So we just have to make sure we don't provide barriers before we even start.
Yeah, I like the modified sessions without the difficulty reference.
You know, a lot of it, like everything in ICANN, is perception and optics. It's unfortunate, but that's how it is.
Okay.
Doing.
Next.
Sorry, I was on mute. May I get the final text that we'd like here then?
Barry, look in the chat and take from requires to the end. I'll repaste it. There you go. Take that.
Okay, got it. 2.11.
I think maybe it should say automated analysis or online survey to determine duplicate registration in new GTLDs.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, that's a good idea to determine, yeah.
I'm sorry, Steve. Online survey
to determine... quote, duplicate registrations.
So you remove of sample of and replace with to determine.
Right.
And this is in the difficulty...
No. In the actual description.
In 2.11 itself. automated analysis or online survey to determine duplicate registrations in new GTLDs, period, for purposes of blah, blah, blah.
No, I'm reading that. Determine or identify? Or determine number of?
Maybe it doesn't matter. Whatever you want.
So, or identify?
Yeah, I think almost either of those you'd want to have number of. You know, it's just identifying. We're trying to come up with a number, but you have to go through the process of determining if they're duplicates or not.
Determine number of. Go
I
with
like that.
That.
Yeah,
I like that. Determine number of.
Okay. 2.12.
Two dot twelve. It probably shouldn't say GTLDS expansion. Just GTLD expansion.
Yeah.
Okay.
2.13. Well, we bludgeoned that again last week, so that should be fine.
I did have one question about that. This is Michael, and that is we have no target. Should we also, though, put in, as we have in some of the targets, comparison only? Or is this an absolute no target? We're just getting a number.
But there isn't even a comparison, Michael. We're not comparing legacy to the new or anything else.
Okay.
You know what I mean? We're not even measuring two things. It's just one simple study.
Just looking, okay.
It's straight data acquisition. Future studies might then compare, but at this stage it would be straight.
Okay.
Okay, 2.14.
In the anticipated difficulties, should there be a paren around refer to consumer choice survey of users noted above? I guess not.
My only issue with 2.14 was the use of annual as opposed to regular.
In 2.4 is where we first encountered this.
Mm.
And we did say annual. And I believe we debated that and said, not exactly sure why. By regular, do you mean more frequently than annual?
No, I mean probably less frequently than annual, but not necessarily tied to annual.
Well, let's be consistent. If we're going to change it to regular doesn't mean anything. It could mean more or less frequent.
It could be more or less, yep.
Does an annual tie into the 1 and 3 years type of look and the 3 year look?
Not
yeah,
really.
It does. It goes 1, 2, and 3.
They only asked us for a 3 year target, in which case you could do the survey once now and then once again in 3 years.
Which is not annual.
I know. We were thinking annual so that you could get it back.
Great.
Now, I'm going to quickly check the U.S. government. It might have been them that pushed us to do annual.
I mean, if there's a rationale, fine. But I'm just very aware that annual surveys tend to end up to be 18 to 24 months apart.
Well, the one guiding principle here is sort of the target, which is to show improvement. Hence, there must be at least two surveys taken.
Yep, which could be 1 and 3.
Correct. I have an idea. What do you guys think about biannual?
I think that's achievable.
More realistic, I think.
I do, yeah.
Twice.
I'd be happy with biannual over annual, and that is tighter than regular.
Yes.
So that means twice a year?
No, that's semi-annual. Biannual is every 2 years.
Very.
Very unclear.
Is it biannual or biennial?
Ennial.
The Internet.
This is Tobias. Sometimes the word is actually used in courses about clarity of language as a negative example, because no one knows whether it's twice a year or every second year. So you shouldn't use that in a contract according to these courses.
Is that biannual or biennial, or both those words, Tobias?
I think it's biannual.
Well, let's use biennial if that doesn't have the same issues.
I don't know. I'm looking up the definition, and it means an event lasting for 2 years or occurring every 2 years.
Occurring every 2 years works.
So B-I-E-N-N-I-A-L.
Perfect.
As long as you don't use monthly.
Good.
No. Stop it.
So we're looking at biennial?
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell that?
B-I-E-N-N-I-A-L.
Yeah, the U.S. government went on and on and on about the importance of these surveys, but they did not specifically request annual. So let's just go with biannual. It makes this look a little more reasonable, realistic.
So that would change.
Happen in 2.4.
As well as 14, yeah.
And let's 14. Go back to consumer trust to see if there were any in there as well.
14.
Yeah, go to 1.4, please. And it's 1.4.
That doesn't give oh, there it is, yeah.
I would ask at the last sentence of 1.4, say, survey to be conducted every 2 years, and put in parens biennial.
And then we just use biennial from then on.
Yeah, how about that?
Perfect. Do you mean we've actually incidentally coordinated Group 1 and Group 2 activities?
Amazing, isn't it?
Hell!
And 2.4. Barry, you got the change on 1.4, right?
Yes.
Barry's on mute. 2.4 starts with the word annual survey. Change that to biennial surveys.
Got it.
And 2.14, same thing.
There you go.
Got it.
Ah, look. God, we're good.
Okay, 2.15.
Traffic data was something the U.S. government really wanted.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Evan is, Wendy is claiming that we should never measure traffic as an indicator of trust, but I think we just have to overrule.
Yeah, her points are noted, and there you go. I have a dumb question, though. Alexa, isn't that a propriety thing? Should we be not just saying DNS scrubbers and saying something else if Alexa's not a DNS scrubber? She says in absolute ignorance of what Alexa actually is. But if it's proprietary, I'm not sure we should name it.
That's a good catch. It's Olivia here.
You could
because
put in parentheses.
At least not for profit.
G.Alexa. How about that?
Yeah, examples Alexa is fine. But I have no problem referencing Spam House because of the nature of its work. Alexa I'm not quite so comfortable with. But as an example,
you could,
yeah.
You could put in parens, E.G, period, space, Alexa.
Yeah, that's
and
fine.
Then Alexa is not all uppercase. It's a regular word. Proper case.
Ta.
On to competition.
I had one style question, and that has to do with the footnotes, which I found extremely useful, but I was wondering if it would not be even more useful and clear if the footnotes were put in two places, one where they are to identify the number, but then also since they are in a way defining after the terms that they're defining or explaining. So quantity of total TLDs before one goes in there. Quantity of GTLDs, two goes there.
Can you even do that? Can you reference the same end note from two different places in the document?
Oh, you mean physically with the software? Yes, you could. You simply force the number and you don't have the other ones changing the number.
You can do it, Barry. Go for it.
Yeah.
Because I was just wondering that as I was reading, you know, and recalling that we had those, and it took me a while to put them together. But, and I think that's excellent information to have in there.
Right, I think it's essential information, yeah.
So the end note would be not only in the target column, but in the measure column for this particular group only. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Okay, I've got that captured. .2, .3, .4.
Can I make a point about this? People will look at our numbers and say a 2x increase is so modest. You guys were way too low. You set the bar too low. But I want to remind our critics that we devised these targets before the application window closed.
Yeah.
And at the time, we were very comfortable that if you double the number of suppliers, that would indicate that you've promoted competition. And I would say the working group didn't feel right just jacking up the numbers because we got so many more apps after the fact. And keep in mind that the targets are going to look at the new GTLDs that happen to still be alive 3 years out, at which point many will only be a mere memory.
We'll be back.
You guys okay with that? It doesn't have to be in the document. It's just sort of an FYI.
Yeah, I think that's just how we pitch it.
Okay. On 3.6, Barry, new entrant is one whose ownership is not among. Instead of at comma as being, it should say a new entrant is one whose ownership is not among.
Yeah, fair enough.
So you're saying to remove the as being?
That's right.
And have it is one.
Take out the comma.
Okay. 3.7.
Can I ask my question again? Should we add comparison over time only? For both 3.7 and 3.8? After no target? Or is that clear from the context?
This isn't even for comparison purposes. The U.S. government insisted on this because they think that when you add new competition, the quantity and pricing will react just like they do in classical microeconomics. I don't think there's even a remote chance of that because these are not readily substitutable and there are high transfer costs. So it isn't even a comparison of before and after. It's simply going to be used to determine whether there have been observable effects in price and quantity when you introduce new competition. But I don't think in this case, Michael, that comparison purposes should be in there.
Can live with that.
On 3.8, I was unsure whether to the average reader the meaning of CC was going to be clear, where it says legacy space or the CCs. If I'm just an email user, I'm going to think we're carbon copying things.
Then let's clarify the middle of that to say does not appear where that same string unique That doesn't even make any sense. String space unique. Why is the word unique in there in quotations?
The same string would do.
That same string does not appear, or that same, yeah, string does not appear as a registration in any TLD.
That's
on
better.
On a weekly or other basis.
Yeah, that would be better, and it stops this legacy space and CCs, and I was particularly disturbed by CCs.
I don't even know what the hell this one does. What is this about? Maybe what the word unique should be is in the very top line of 3.8. Quantity of quote-unquote unique second-level registration.
Yeah, that would help.
So move unique, Barry, to the first line. Quantity of unique second-level registrations in the new GTLD.
Space where that same string does not appear as any registration as a registration in any
other TLD.
In any TLD on a weekly or in any other
weekly or other
any
basis.
Other TLD on a weekly or other in, or in, or other interval.
I'll try to paste it in.
I got it.
Good, thank you. Yeah, so this is about uniqueness, so it's good to put the word unique up in the top line. Okay, this next measures related to prices. You probably need to gray that bar out. That's one of those notational bars. Shading gray.
As long as there's not 50 shades of them.
10%. Yeah, I haven't read that book. I bet you have.
Okay, 3.9.10.
Good.
Oh, yeah. But change the studies to 100 to 200K, because some of the WHOIS studies were as much as 200, weren't they, Barry?
Yes.
Okay.
The 100 to 200K.
Okay. I'm just wondering, too, in the measure, the last line, four new market segments. I'm not sure what that means, particularly four new market segments.
If a brand new dot bike is a new market segment, because there's never been a bicycle segment on the Internet. And
right.
I think that Paul Toomey gave us this one. Saying that innovation really happens on the edge. It doesn't happen in some of the legacy
yeah.
areas. It happens on the edge. New markets served. Maybe that's the way to say it. New markets served.
Or for new markets served, yeah, or in new market segments. Yeah, so, something like that would.
How about for particularly for new markets served?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, now we can dive into the end notes, and we'll be done.
Woohoo!
Barry, is the working group member? I'd hate to leave anybody out. We have everybody here.
As far as I know, yes.
I was going to suggest that they get put in a special order, like alphabetical or something, which clears it a bit up. Because at the moment, they're kind of scattered in no specific fashion.
Yeah, put them in alphabetical order by last name, and you probably ought to.
Jonathan needs to be listed as work group chair as well.
That's right.
I am so tempted to ask for NCSG after my name, but they tally enough with me in their ranks, so I won't. Sorry. You know me. I'd rather have a fight than a feed.
All right. On page 18, I added a new note.
Yep.
Take a look underneath the note, the second paragraph. It should be confidentiality provisions. I used the wrong word there. Confidentiality provisions.
Should we have a 20-page disclaimer as well in there?
only if we get our own legal advice, and I suggest we don't.
On Appendix C, I believe that you have to label this appropriately. The following is a dissent position from Wendy Seltzer.
Of the non-commercial stakeholders group. That's fine.
I don't even know if you need to.
Yeah.
If you want to, you can, of the NCSG. But it's really from an individual. We went all through this 2 hours ago, right?
It is, and the fact that she is quoting NCSG is her business, but I think we should definitely name her as Wendy Seltzer of the, because she's listed as NCSG.
All right, Wendy Seltzer, comma, NCSG.
Yep.
And one underneath this, which would be from Evan.
And just let me do a quick mental review. I believe Alex also indicated his support for it on the NCSG list.
And
not
is Alex
here.
Listed in our working group?
He is as NCSG.
All right, and I guess you're going to have to...
I mean, he hasn't been to a meeting, has he? But he is listed.
All right, then you really have to say the following is a dissent position from Wendy Seltzer and Alex Gakuru of the NCSG.
That's fine.
Agreed, Barry?
Sure.
Barry, I know it happens in other... and yes to the Evan thing on the end, obviously. It happens in other work group reports, and I don't care that it's appended, but I'd like it linked as a hyperlink if it's on a wiki page somewhere. And that's the attendance of work group members.
I like that.
It sticks in my craw where people just, you know, have their names listed and do sweet Fanny Adams in terms of contribution. So I'm all for that. It's something GNSO has done in other work groups, but I don't necessarily like it taking up space as it does in some reports. If it can be popped up on a wiki and just a hyperlink on that underneath the listing of the members, then I think that does the job, and it allows us to... as groups who put people onto working groups, to have some accountability on who's pulling their weight and sharing our voice into that space.
Sure, I like the idea, but is there really a hyperlink place that lists the attendance?
There will be. Within the wiki, we have each meeting listed and who attended and who apologized. We haven't rolled that up into a master list, but I'll do that and then link to that master list.
Well done. Thank you.
And it makes me happy, which is always important. Sorry, guys. I'm in need of coffee at this end of the day. My calls for this morning started at 4 a.m. It's now 7:36, so be gentle with me.
So outside of the details of the end notes, we're at the bottom of the advice letter.
Why are the numbers red on 17 and 14?
Because I was trying to highlight them so
that
they understand the count.
Sure, sure. as long as it wasn't sort of markup stuff that I was looking at, that's all.
There is one GTLB missing in node number 2, which is .arpa.
Dot who?
ARPA. The reason why, because it's not available for registration by anybody.
Right, that's
so
a restricted,
with permits.gov.mil.in.edu and .arpa.
But it doesn't count because you can't register for it. All the rest
could, actually. I've seen someone run their email out of a .arpa because you can you get given an IP address that, well, it's complicated, but you can flub it with an IPv6 address.
It's used exclusively for technical infrastructure purposes, so let's not do that. Let's not bring it in.
Do you want to list it in the emissions, though?
Yeah, that's what I meant. List it in next to .gov.mil.in.edu. I was going
to
say...
List it in the parenthetical.
All right. Good idea.
And, of course, have a space after omit. There.
Okay, good catch.
Pedantry to the end. God, I love working with you boys.
Pedantry. Oh, I feel pretty pedantic right now. I need a drink.
You mean you haven't started drinking?
Olivia's through his first bottle of red by now.
I'm only kidding.
On note 3 here, should we really be doing RO instead of registry operators? We don't use RO anyplace else.
Where do you see RO?
Yeah, where is that? Oh, in the triple dot down the bottom. Yep.
Way at the bottom, triple star.
Can you blow that out, Barry?
Put the full word in. Here. Yep.
That's what I call dedication here. The small print at the end of the last page of the last thing after 2.5 hours.
Great. Yes, a note to a footnote to the end notes.
Yep. But we were there for the last, guys.
Okay,
that's
so
it, everybody.
I've got a laundry list of changes to make to this, and I'll get that out tonight to the working group. As I said, we have till Friday morning to respond back to any other changes. All changes should be submitted to the list, and if I don't hear any objection or dialogue on a particular change, I'll consider it golden for Friday morning release. And then we'll ship it off to the council.
Excellent. This is really important stuff, and I know we've had our moments of, oh, my God, why are we doing this? But they haven't been very frequent, and I think this has exceeded my expectations when we dived into it.
Absolutely. And I should make one other note that I'll be including in the staff implementation notes, and it's hard to say who and what makeup the future review team will be, but I will be requesting that members of this team be available, or hopefully will be available for the future review team to brief them in addition to just the advice letter itself about the metrics that are being created here.
That's excellent, particularly if they're active members of this review team, of this work group.
And active members as advisors, yes.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I have. Any last
Hang on, Barry. There is one other thing, and I don't know about everyone else, and it's a pity not everyone's on the call, but if you can imagine us all standing up giving you a standing ovation for what I would consider an amazingly detailed and superb job. You've helped us wrangle our language into, something that I'm proud to have my name on. And I mean, Steve and everyone else has done, a big part of that, but your input as a team member as well as staff support has been phenomenal. And without you, we'd still be a long way back in the program. And I just wanted to go, hey, fantastic job. Round of applause. If I could give you one, you'd be hearing it.
Appreciate that very much. And likewise, I appreciate the team effort here, and I definitely believe we wouldn't be where we're at without us all.
We done did do good.
But can we all go out and have a drink now?
Now, I will be doing a little workshop in Toronto for my ALOC lot, our ALOC lot. That was hard to say. I assume Steve will play in the GNSO room. But it might be nice to have an unofficial get-together and compare notes even after that.
Agree. Yep.
Okay.
Excellent.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Enjoy your week, and see you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone.
And I'm adopting sweet Fanny Adams.
Kelly, you can stop the recording, please. Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. Please disconnect at this time.